Audience, welcome into the Get Bodied podcast. This is your host, Sharcross, a.k.a. your boy, Cher. And as always, my beautiful, dashing, amazingly fit co-hosts. Give it up for Mr. Dutton, a.k.a. the Jungle Kitty. And everyone's favorite doctor.
What?
Dr. Luke.
I had something really good lined up, and then I forgot what it was.
An audience, on this episode, we have Lucas on the podcast. David, tell us a little bit what happened in the podcast.
Lucas is the kind of guy that you know you like, but you can't really explain him if you don't have a conversation with him. And then all of a sudden you spend some time with him and you realize that there's so much to his life. And I just so excited about his willingness to not just tell us about it, but to show us, you know, more about the things he's went through. And I'm excited. Plus, a guy from, you know, the East of Columbus, you know.
Southeast, so, yeah, baby.
Shout out to Southeast Columbus.
Yeah, Bryce.
Yeah, let's go, Bryce.
Village of Bryce. Wildcats.
I don't think anybody's ever shouted out the Village of Bryce.
Yeah, cruisers.
Bro. What are the cruisers? Shout out to the cruise ships.
Oh, my God.
Audience, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Link in the Patreon down below. Sorry for our hiatus, but we hope you enjoyed this episode.
Did your brother steal your gallbladder?
So I think it was his birthday, or it was his birthday or my dad's birthday, one of the two. But we were leaving. We always go to this place in it's like Pickerington, Reynoldsburg. It's like that cross on 70. It's a Lafagata.
Go Panthers.
Lafagata.
Yeah, we go there almost once a week.
Okay.
Because my parents were divorced. Okay. So like this is how we kind of like kept in the loop of, like, I lived with my mom, and then, you know, I see my dad once a week. So he's like, let's go.
Your brother live with you or with your mom?
So my brother, my brother being such a pain in the ass and stubborn and did not like authority at all, when he got to the age where he could afford to move out, he gone instantly. Like, went and got his own place, moved out. Just could not handle. He's big, and there's a certain way that I always have to deal with my brother when I talk to him. It throws my fiance for a loop because she's like, why do you act so different around him? And I was like, because there is a fine line with him, because he will completely shut down and turn into an asshole and basically, like, you know, everything that comes out of your mouth, it's like you're telling him what to do. So, like, you have to approach every situation with him a certain way, or else you're like, well, opening a can of worms of, like, this is not going anywhere, and you guys are just going to get upset with each other. So he moved out. He couldn't take, like, my parents telling him what to do. And so he would come around as well, not as much as, like, I hung out with my dad. I hung out with my dad way more than my brother did. But he came around for his birthday, and my brother would always insist on giving me, like, a big hug all the time. He'd pick me up and crack my back. Well, prior to this, like, I'd wake up in the middle of the night with back pain, and I was taking ibuprofen, and I'd just sit there and suffer for like an hour, and then I'd go to sleep because it would go away. And it was between my shoulder blades, and I wasn't putting two and two together. Well, he cracks my back that night, and I was like, man, I hope this doesn't make my back inflame because it's bothering me for the past couple months. Turns out it was like a, you know, he flipped a switch. Like, the minute I got in my car and started heading, this is when I live with my mom, the minute I started heading back to my mom's place, I could feel it, like, like resonating. And I was like, what the fuck is going on right now? And by the time I got back to the house, I, you know, get on my computer, check my emails and stuff, watch YouTube, all of a sudden it started getting worse and worse and worse. And then I felt in my chest and I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I'm dying right now. And then I went into the bathroom and it was like my body went into like full like protection mode. And I just started throwing up in the sink, in the toilet. I was yelling for my mom. She came out and she's like, what's going on? Oh my God. Like holy shit. Like, this is like a nightmare.
Yeah, the Mexican food got you.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, the Mexican food and like gallbladder inflamed. Because it's like got gallstones in it and it's blocked. Like
gallstones, the flabby thing in the chickens, they have stones in it.
Sure. What's that called? That's why.
That's why. Is I thought that
a,
of that.
That's a thing.
No.
No. Wait, the gizzard. The gizzard. That's what it's called.
Somebody.
That's so, not the gizzard. That, is not that. So he. Like, your gallbladder's inflamed.
Yep. So my gallbladder became inflamed and it started swelling. And then...
But your gallbladder's not in the top of your back.
No, so... It,
that's what I was confused
about. So it's like a telltale sign.
It's called referred pain.
Yeah.
That's where the nerves to your gallbladder come out of your spinal cord. In the middle of your back.
Yeah, right between your shoulder blades.
Serious. Mm-hmm. I'm actually way more confused.
Is that why? I was at this shitty chiropractor one time. I have a thing about chiropractors, like, you know, like where they're like money makers versus like actually helping. I ended up going to one that was just money maker, man. Like, he's just cycling people out. Like, holy cow. And he was trying to help me. Well, so I started by going in and I saw like the thing on the wall and it was like, oh, you got pain here, and it's like a little line, gallbladder. And he came in, I'm like, hey, that happened to me. He's like, really? So anyways, yeah, so that night I went to Diley Ridge. Yeah. Don't go to Diley Ridge.
I know exactly where that's at.
Like, that's not a great hospital, my opinion. Went there. They did, like, tons of tests on me where they like did an x-ray. They did, I'm probably gonna say shit that is probably not what it's supposed to be because I don't know what they are, like just the machine that spins, like you go through the center and stuff, and they put dye in me and stuff.
Is that an MRI machine?
It's a CT scan.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah, so I just wanted to say CAT scan. Yeah. Like, is that the same thing?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Got multiple things for it.
It's like they take the A out though, so the CT is like CAT.
Yeah. Cat sounds better.
Oh my gosh, you can spell.
So they put me through it, and it's wild how your body feels when that shit goes through, because it's like your whole body just gets warm, but couldn't see anything. So finally they were like, we don't have an ultrasound machine, because that's what they use to figure it out. Like, that's the foolproof way. And they're like, our ultrasound machine that we use, we share it amongst buildings, and we don't have it in our building right now. So what we're going to do is we're just going to do an x-ray on you. So they did an x-ray, and they're like, yeah, there's some gallstones right here. We think your gallbladder is inflamed. They gave me Dilaudid. Holy shit. That was probably the best thing that ever happened to me that night. I was hanging over the bed. Like, I was hanging over it. I was trying to find ways to get the pain to go away, because they were giving me everything besides something, because they were trying to locate the issue and give me different things to figure out where it was. And finally, they're like, oh, yeah, you got gallstones, your gallbladder's inflamed. Gave me Dilaudid, and it was like 10, 15 seconds, and all of a sudden, I was like, whoosh, like gone. And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, I told the guy, I'm like, why the hell did you not give me this sooner? Like, this is it was the worst pain I've ever felt in my entire life. So I went home, and I was supposed to go to my primary doctor at the time, like a couple days later. And my mom's talking to my primary doctor, because they have like an emergency like phone line where you can call straight to the doctor and just talk to them. And she did it all the time. She was always talking to this lady. The lady's like, you know what? I want to see him now. Like, bring him here right now. Like, 3 days before. I walk in there, and she's like, let me, like, pull your shirt up. She started pushing on me, and she's like, oh, God. And she's like, are you in pain? I'm like, I'm sore. And I slept for 2 days straight. Like, literally for 2 days. She's like, you're going St. Anne's right across the street in right Westerville, St. Anne's. You're going right there right now. And they're going to admit you, and I'm calling ahead before you even get over there. And she's like freaking out because she's like, if it ruptures, it's bad news. Like, bad, bad news. So I get over there. They do the ultrasound. You know how, you know, like, we can't tell you. The doctor has to tell you. And I'm like, okay. So finally he walks in. He's like, yeah, I can't get you tonight. You need it out. And I'm like, oh, great. Surgery. First time ever having surgery. And he's just like, whatever. So the next day rolls around. I sleep, spend the night. They come around. They're like, yeah, you're not gone until later today. And I'm like, fuck, man. I haven't had anything to drink at all. I'm dying. And all of a sudden, this lady, like, 5 minutes later rolls in. It's like, yeah, you're going now. I'm like, all right, cool. So took me away and got it out. And I remember the one thing that I remember is the nurse, like, the nurse wheeled me out the next day, wheeled me out to the car, and my parents weren't with me. She was with me in the elevator, and she told me, she's like, okay, I'm gonna tell you right now, I see a lot of young people come through here, and you're gonna get some painkillers, and I just want you to know, like, you should take these when you need them. But, like, they're very addictive, and I don't want you to, like, you know,
get addicted.
Like, get addicted to them. So she's like, just take them as you need them. Oh, man, that night I needed that shit so bad. I was like, it was like a fire was radiating from me, and you had to find a 24-hour pharmacy. Those are hard to find, like, and get the shit right away. But that was a good time. Don't ever want to do it again.
Ever. You only have one though, right? One gallbladder?
Yeah, it's gone.
Oh,
yeah, I
had one.
It was a laparoscopic, I think is that the word? Yeah. So like I got like three holes here, and then my belly button looked like it got annihilated, and then they just filled it with like glue. And I'm like, man, this shit sucks. Like, it sucks even more when it itches. It just got to fall.
How do you feel it in your upper back? That's so crazy. Yeah. And just all the way down there?
No, your gallbladder's like here.
Lucas pointing to the middle,
just put a little beneath my sternum.
Oh,
you should see abdomen. How they, like, back in the old days, because I was looking it up that night, I was like, man, how fucked up am I gonna be from this? And I was looking at the photos, and back in the old days, you get some crazy big ass cut, like, I think in the back or something. And I'm like, man, I'm gonna, that's, that looks terrible. I don't want that. But no.
Tell us about your relationship with your parents.
Oh, man. Let me start with my mom. Like, when I grew up, like, basically, like, my mom took care of us. My entire childhood until I think I was about 10 or 12, maybe. And then, my dad was a construction worker, owned his own business, McLean Construction. And he would travel everywhere. He had like usually about two or three guys that would work with him. And there's only really like one of them around that we really still know. And he does his own thing now. But yeah, he would travel a lot. So I'd only see him usually at night. And I'd never see him in the morning because he would always leave extra early. Like, he's out there at 5 a.m. starting the diesel truck up, like, you know, blah, 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 like ready to go. And so my mom took care of us. She worked at Michael's and Hobby Lobby and stuff. She was a really crafty person. Just get her by. They would work with picking us up from school and taking us to school. She was very adamant about taking us to school. We, like, never rode the bus. And then, like, you know, my parents had a lot of issues stemming from both sides growing up. You know, country life, heavily, you know, she grew up with like four or five brothers, I think. And, you know, they all lived under one roof. Grandpa barely scraping by. Grandma didn't work. She didn't know how to drive. Like, they're in a kind of like Thurston, which is like a really old town. And she would take care of them, and they had a lot of issues because, like, you know, the old churchy kind of deal where it was like, you know, don't be like that kid down the road, like, you always want to show like you're the good kid. Is and then like the boys and the girls got treated differently. Like, she was heavily, like, she was the only daughter. So she was heavily protected, heavily sheltered. And then her brothers just got to kind of do whatever they wanted. So they, and they, you know, like there was just a lot of issues that can arise from that with like communication. And then my dad was adopted at a young age. Like he was like maybe 3 or 4 years old when he got adopted. And we can get into that. Like there's a whole lot surrounding all that stuff. But like, you know, when you grow up back then and you got adopted, whoever your foster parents were, they couldn't take you. So like, even if it worked out and you like the foster parents wanted the kid, they couldn't have the kid. The way that they worked it back in the day with the system was they don't want the kid to be associated with anybody during their foster care. After they're like, they don't want them to be associated whatsoever with their foster parents until they're adopted, like after they're adopted. So, basically he got adopted by, I don't call her my grandma. I mean, it's easy to refer to her as my grandma, but she's just not, she should have never. And my dad said to me all the time, should have never been parents. They were never like, my grandma struggled with getting pregnant from the stories that I hear. So they decided to adopt, but both of them together, like he worked at, I think it was DCS or DCSE or whatever, that big government looking mm-hmm. building in Whitehall. He worked there as like a lawyer for the government, and he was just racked, you know, like making a bunch of money, like very well off. And she kind of was just like, she was a realtor, you know, and very well off, and adopted two kids, adopted my dad. And then my dad had a half sister, Samantha, and they all grew up together. But they didn't know how to take care of kids. They didn't know how to deal with kids. And then also back then, like my dad was severe ADHD as well. So like he had a lot of learning disabilities, or a lot of learning developmental issues. And they didn't really know how to deal with that. They didn't know these things. So like he was very neglected when he was a kid. And there was a lot of like messed up things that happened to him that I didn't get to really unpack from him until like around the time that he ended up passing away. But my mom, you know, she's come a long way. Like she used to be like very quiet to herself. Wouldn't really talk to a lot of people, just kind of was like small group. And then I think that stemmed from a lot of her growing up and having a lot of communication issues and being sheltered. And then just the way my dad would handle things, like he would like just not handle situations very well, because you know, he just never knew how to deal with it. Didn't know how to deal with his own issues, and didn't know how to really deal with his relationship issues with my mom. So they ended up separating, and then I'm trying to like not lose my train of thought. Man, how old was I? Oh, dude, I must have been like somewhere between 10 and 13 years old, maybe. It's just like a lot of those things that like I told you guys earlier, like a lot of those things, like I put them away because it just doesn't matter anymore, you know. Like it does matter in the big picture, but like we've grown from a lot of those things in our family, and if we bring it up, we talk about it, and we're like, man, like remember how that shit was, like, you know, and all this, and you know, we can look back on it and just like have a open conversation about it and be like, you know, I wish things would have been different. We all could have wished things were different, but you know, it's kind of life. So okay. But yeah, they ended up separating, and then my mom was seeing a guy, and that's my stepdad now, Tom. Tom's an interesting guy. Yeah, he's my stepdad. Took me a long time to be comfortable saying that, because it was like, you know, my dad's my dad, you know, like you're just a guy. But no, he's been there for me for a lot of things, and I've been able to recognize those things now because I actually like I try to do this thing where I look from the outside in when I get upset about stuff to try and, like, you know, because, like, I always go to my dad for a lot of things because my dad was just the guy that I could go to and be like, hey, this is the exact situation. What do you think? Like, what's your opinion? And he would always be open and honest with me and never hold it against me. And, you know, we were best friends.
Give me an example.
Like, I could tell him, like, I smoked weed the other day with my friends. And, you know, I really don't know if I like it. And some parents would be like, you know, that would be, like, devastating end of the world. No, he would be like, well, what'd you think? You know? How was it? Was it worth it? Like, would you do it again? Oh, I remember the time when I did it, you know? Like, my dad's grew up in, like, the hippie area, you know? Like, there's photos of him with, like, you know, buttoned down to, like, right below your chest and, like...
Right to the gallbladder.
Yeah, and, like, he's, like, right to the gallbladder. And he's, like, in, like, a full dancing outfit, you know, loose pants at the bottom and, like full disco outfit. Like, this dude, like, grew up, you know, trying every drug imaginable and, like, just having a good time and doing whatever the hell you want to do and just not even really thinking about, you know... No regrets, you know? So, like, it's just... I could talk to him about literally anything, and I just knew that he would do his best to give me an honest answer, even if he couldn't. And that's all I really needed. Hmm. And so now I gotta do that for myself, I feel like, in a way. And grow up a little bit more. Like... way faster than I wanted to. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, so yeah.
If you were to look at your, if you were to go back, I know you had said that you've grown up a lot and there's been a lot that you've learned and you've grown from, you know, that stage of, like, that 10 to 14 years old. What would you, if you could, like time travel and go be able to have a conversation with yourself, what would you say?
I mean, there's just a lot of things when you're younger that are just out of your control. And you just kind of have to, like, it sucks to say, but you just got to deal with it, you know? Like, you got to roll with the punches. You got to, you know, sometimes, like, life hits you a lot harder than it should, you know, in the whole big picture, like, movie kind of shit, you know, but like nothing is perfect. And, you know, you can't really just live on, you know, your hopes and dreams, and you just got to move on with reality and do what's best for yourself. And, you know, don't let these things bother you. Try to make the most out of what you can, and just try to, how can we move on to make this better? You know, like, just focus on that. Not everything is the end of the world, you know?
Lucas, fill in the gaps a little bit for us for, I guess, from, did you grow up in Thurston?
Or no.
Did you grow up and then high school a little bit? And then tell us a little bit about after high school.
Well, I grew up in Bryce, Ohio, small village of Bryce. Very, very, I don't know what you, like, you know, how they label towns and stuff. Like, you get labeled as a village for this amount of people in there. Mm-hmm. And then you go, it just goes kind of up. So we were living in a really small village of Bryce. And I went to Groveport Madison High School. For my high school.
Go Wildcaps?
Cruisers.
It's a horse.
Come on. I forgot Groveport, sorry.
Most people forget about
Groveport. They're Groveport. Red and black, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I forgot the colors.
I'm thinking of South. Westerl South.
Most people forget about Groveport.
South, I don't even think is Wildcats either. I'm drunk. Sorry.
Wow. I didn't know Bryce was there.
Yeah.
Like, it's like right, it borders Pickerington.
Yeah. And you know what sucks too is we don't have our, like our addresses aren't like federal addresses, I think that's how they say it. We all have P.O. boxes, and when you go call the cable company, you call around and be like, oh, I want internet from, you know, my house. I live at this address. And they're like, that address doesn't register anywhere. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I literally had WoW cable is not a thing, or it's Breeze Line. Yeah. But I had WoW cable 5 years ago, and I switched to AT&T, and I want to switch back to WoW. How do you guys not have my shit in your system? I have a cable line that's still kind of there.
Yeah.
And it's like I can't even, Zelle. You have to put in your home address in Zelle to Zelle people. I can't Zelle anybody because my house is not registered as a legitimate address.
Wait, you still live over in Bryce?
Yeah. So when my dad passed away, my fiance and I decided that we were going to move into his house because it had been I got a lot of shit. When my parents got divorced, my dad had a business. My mom was the accountant. A lot of shit went down, so they both filed for bankruptcy. My dad actually didn't end up filing for bankruptcy, I found out when I was doing probate shit. But my mom filed for bankruptcy because she was a co-signer or whatever. It kind of put the house in a limbo. So then my dad was like, well, if the fucking house is getting taken, I'm not paying for shit until they take it. So we basically lived in the house for, I want to say, almost 2 years without paying anything. And we just, paid, utility. You pay it. It's like we were squatters, practically. Yeah. And I didn't know shit because I'm just a kid. I'm just we're here, I don't know what's going to happen, but, I got an Xbox in the other room. I'm just playing till my heart's content. But, so they ended up taking the house. And my dad, before they took the house, my dad, for I think it was probably 8 or 10 years, he cut it off with his adopted mom because her husband's not in the situation. Her husband died back in 91, 92 when my brother was born. 93. He died from lung cancer. But anyway, so she was by herself, and then my dad's sister, half-sister, that was adopted with him, was heavily into drugs, and she was she was a part of the whole crack phase when crack became a big thing, so she got addicted to crack, and then she ended up developing, we think, schizophrenia from it. So basically, she became just crazy. And she moved in with grandma, and there was a lot of time. My dad was for a long time becoming almost his own little PI, where he was in trying to catch my aunt in some sort of thing where he could basically get her arrested to get her rehabbed and get her away from my grandma because she was using my grandma. And so she ended up assaulting my grandma one night, and I remember it. We showed up at the house, there was cops everywhere. And so anyways, after that whole situation, my dad was just I can't do this. She said something. My brother told me the other day, literally the other day, that my grandma had said something to my dad she had said something about Samantha, my aunt, about how bad she was and how something about love. And my dad was well, did you feel that way about, do you feel that way about me too? And my grandma basically just didn't even say anything to his face. So he was that was a big turning point for my dad, was well, if you don't love me, I'm gone. I've got my own family. So completely cut ties. Never talked to my grandma again. Never saw my aunt again. So I think we're getting back to it. My dad's foster mother decided to try and reconnect with my dad again. Old lady pops up out of nowhere at the door. She's got to be at least barely 5 foot. And it's movie old white lady with curly white hair at the door. Is Dawn here? And I'm like, no. And she's like, okay, well, let him know Pat Warner came by. And I was like, okay. So then I let my dad know, and then finally she stops by when he's there. And basically my dad was going through some shit at that time, like full-on depression, and like the depression where you sleep, you just work, come home, and you just sleep. And I didn't know anything of it, which whatever, we can not focus on that. But yeah, so she ended up reconnecting with him and basically being like, you know, like, what's going on? You know, I want to reconnect with you. And then it turned into basically where she's like, I want to be your mom. I'll be that. I want you to have a family, because my dad never had really had a family. Everybody used my dad. My dad was easily used because he was always wanting to please people for nothing. So he was always there for somebody, and everybody took advantage of him. So that's why he cut a lot of people off, because eventually he would figure it out, like, oh, this person doesn't like me for me. They just want to use me. So she didn't want that. And she wanted to be his mother. And so he ended up reconnecting. She became his mom. And so trying to focus back on it, we ended up losing the house. We got kicked out of the house, vacated. I moved in with a old couple down the street, love them to death. I wish I talked to them more, but I lived with them to just get through my sophomore year of high school at Groveport. And then my plan was to stay in the school system and then go to a vocational school. And I decided to go to Fairfield Career Center. And that's where I went into automotive technology, but it was open enrollment. And I moved in with my mom and my stepdad, and they gave me a car. It was a Nissan 07 Nissan Altima, not exactly what I wanted, because they had asked me, like, what do you want? And I was sending them all this shit, and all they come out of nowhere. I'm like, I've never heard of a Nissan Altima before. And I'm like, I felt bad about it, because I was like, you know, I can't be that asshole kid that's like, would you give me this shit box? Turns out it was like the best car ever. I regret selling it to my buddy. I took care of it for a long time, but one day the radiator went out and my buddy let it overheat, and I was like, dude, it's gonna cost you this much money for me to fix it, or you go get yourself a new car. Connor, by the way. Connor.
Oh, it's so, Connor again.
Yeah, fucking Connor, man.
Come on, Connor.
Goddamn Connor.
I tell you what though, I like the beard and long hair.
Yeah, yeah. So he rocks it, honestly. Like, he full blown. I didn't know how I felt about it, but the other day I stopped by his work and saw him, and I didn't recognize him because he put it back in a ponytail. I'm like, man, you look good, man. You looks great.
Yeah, still can't take care of his cars, but
yeah. No, you can't at all. So they got me the Nissan Altima. I drove from New Albany down to Lancaster and back every single day.
Oh, wow.
Just so that I could get my vocational stuff done. Well, anyways, so my dad moved in with Pat, and Pat's like, live here rent free, you know, and if I need odds and ends done around the house, like, just help me out taking care of this place, and I'll feed you and I'll give you a home. And her husband died, I think, of Parkinson's a long time ago. But it was funny, like, my dad and him had connected at one point. They'd worked on a job site together for like a year or two, so he knew him. And turns out, like, I don't know if he knew about the whole, like, yeah, I'm married to your foster mom. Like, I don't know, because I never got to ask that question to my dad. But it's just fucking insane, like, how small the world is when you start, like, conversing with a lot of people. Because it's like, oh yeah, I know that fucking guy. Like it happens. The more you talk to more people, eventually it's like everybody almost knows everybody, and it's like kind of scary. But yeah, so out of nowhere, the house finally goes up for auction, my dad's house. And she didn't tell my dad. She went and bought it cash. and gave it to my dad and said, I want you to pay me back, you know, every month, whatever you can give me, pay me back. But I want you to keep this house because this is your house. So he ended up doing that. And then when it finally got paid off, my dad, because of the whole bankruptcy with my mom and his business, you know, a lot of things were put in limbo. My dad doing his thing where he likes to just like, let's see how long I can let that shit fester before it actually becomes a major problem, which is not my problem. Yeah, so he finally, like, he moved back in the house, paid my grandma back all the money that she paid for the house. Never told the people, that like the bank that she bought from the house, just said, I have a renter that's going to fix it while he's renting it from me. And it worked. So paid it off. And then when finally the house was paid off, Pat told my dad, like, what are we going to do? Because I don't want this house in my name. It just doesn't make sense. So my dad came to me because I'm the most responsible child and was like, I want you to put this house in your name for me, because I'm worried about it going into my name. But, you know, mutual understanding is if something happens, God forbid, that you and your brother will split it. And I'm like, okay. So I, you know, for like years, I owned that house. I took care of the property. Like, I pretty much owned a house without living in a fucking house. And I did everything. And so, you know, grew up pretty quick from that. But yeah, so now I don't remember the original question that we had.
You live in Bryce.
Yeah, so now I live back in Bryce.
Yeah.
I'm back in Bryce, and so, I still have neighbors there that I don't really like very much. They're still there. But yeah, full circle, live in Bryce again. Hmm. So hopefully not for long. I know you had a question. It was like 3-year plan was after we get married and we can focus our financials back on the house, is to try and get this into a spot where we can utilize that to go somewhere else. We talked about staying in Ohio, but she's a California girl and I don't give a fuck guy. So like, I did have my like thing where I was like, I'm totally like fine with being here in Ohio. Like, I don't give a shit. But she's like, she's had a taste of the sweet stuff, you know, like down south. And she's like, I want that back. So, you know, our plan is probably if the company I work for decides to open, you know, because we're a big corporation, if we open up a facility down south somewhere where it's like, oh, that sounds nice, let's go there, we might just do that. But I don't know just yet.
Speaking of that, you work for
Rivian Automotive.
What do you do for them?
I'm labeled as a field service technician. Basically, I work in commercial and consumer, and I fix vehicles for a living. I've been a mechanic for since like 2014. So like since my junior year of like
sophomore 10 years.
Yeah, so 10 years. And I'm at 26 now. Gonna be 27 coming up here at the end of the year. But I've been a automotive technician, mechanic for that long. And yeah, I fix electric cars, and I love it. I love cars. I love working on cars, and I've gotten out of it and got back in it because I like it so much. And yeah,
you love cars so much that you also have a business as well.
Yeah, so I have a rental car company, and it's not my favorite thing ever. But also it's because of the economy that makes it not so much fun. But yeah, I rent out. I hate to talk shit about it because it's like, you know, it's like I've been through a lot with it. But yeah, I have a rental car company, and basically, you know, we rent out cars. I don't have that many cars anymore because I'm trying to get rid of overhead. So I just got one van that I'm trying so hard to get rid of. So hard.
What kind of van?
It's a Kia Carnival.
Let's talk out off air.
It's an 8-seater minivan. It's got the pads and like the things on the back of the seats, like a like tablet screens and stuff. And
Dang. Let's talk later. So you're trying to get rid
we
of
we can
it,
try. Right? My business partner has been a bit of a. It's between me and him on the whole deal, so it's like the last car I got to get rid of. But I've
got rid of all those Nissan Altimas already, didn't you?
Dude, if I had Nissan Altimas, I don't know. That's 50-50. Either like they're in the shop all the time or they're making me a ton of money. One of the two. I mean, I guess I could fix them, but nobody likes working on their own shit, you know? Mm. Yeah, I've had that for a while now. I had that during COVID, which was great because it was like I had a lot of connections with dealerships and stuff. I was getting things at, you know, list price, like what manufacturer pricing. Because during COVID, you try to buy a car, it's like anywhere from $3,000 to $10,000 over for just the average car because it was a nightmare to get a hold of anything. We had connections with dealers that would give us it at that. And then the interest rates were amazing. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is great. I love it. And then all of a sudden, that one bank in California took a shit. And then everything went to hell. So our interest rates, ever since then, interest rates are just like double and triple. And I'm like, I regret it, but I don't regret it. You know, I've learned a lot from it. Lost a lot of money, made a lot of friends, and yeah, good times. So yeah, it's there's a lot going on. I have a lot going on all the time.
Yeah. I would like to know, I mean, and you can talk as little or as much as you'd like to talk about this, but if you wouldn't mind sharing just a snapshot of your past couple of years, all the stuff that you've had to walk through recently.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, the biggest thing the past couple of years, highlight / terrible, my dad was in a terrible accident at his job, and I remember the day it happened. I was doing my normal thing. I was working for Tesla at the time, you know, mobile technician going out fixing cars. It was like a nice, it was not a nice day. It was actually raining. And I was at this Target I always hit up in Hilliard, and it was like Hilliard, Dublin. Go in there, you know, use the bathroom. And then grab a snack. And on my way out, I get a phone call from somebody I never get a phone call from. And it was his HR lady. And she basically said, your dad has been in a terrible accident at work. And he's headed to Mount Carmel East. And you're the first person that I've been able to get a hold of. And I need you to know that he's going there. And it was like tunnel vision. I was like, oh shit, I'm like, I need to go. And I called my boss. I was like, dude, cancel everything for the rest of the day. And it was like torrential downpour. Like I could not see 5 feet in front of my car, and I'm doing 90 through 670 bobbing and weaving through cars in my work car. And I'm like, the absolute worst thing you could do I was doing. And I got to Mount Carmel East and get there. And I'm just like you're in a fog. You're just like, what do I do? Where do I go? And my dad, because of what happened to him, basically when they called, they said a bomb went off. So it turned into a bomb issue. And when you equate bomb to healthcare transportation, you're unlisted on everything. You have numbers to your name. So I show up there, and there's who are those people that walk around that kind of offer religious advice to you?
The chaplains.
Chaplains. I had this crazy chaplain, man. Like, he was a crazy dude, just started his whole like helping out Mount Carmel thing. This man was like, it was like almost some of the stuff that he would do was just pissing so many people off of the hospital. But he was like determined. I didn't know how determined he was until like We found him. And he was on the fourth floor. He was in the ICU. And I called everybody that I could because I was the only person that knew. And it took a while for everybody to get there. But I'm just like no idea what's going on. My mom shows up and she's just full blown like attack mode on everybody. Like, where the hell is he? And finally, somebody found him. He was on, I think it was the blue wing for fourth floor, which is like not a good place to be. Like, it's where people go when shit's really bad and they're gonna die. And I didn't understand the severity of it until like I can't remember if it was my mom or my brother pulled us to the elevators and was like, it's bad. And I was like, I didn't truly grasp like where I was at the time, but I just like went to the bathroom, like just beeline to the bathroom and just fucking had a mental fucking breakdown. And I was like, this is just not the right time. Like, this should not be happening, you know? So yeah, I'm having a mental fucking breakdown in the bathroom, and all I hear is my fiance knocking on the door, and she wants in, and she just would not stop. And I was like, finally, I was just like, get in here. And I'm just like I've never been more, that was, you want to talk about helpless, like that's probably the most helpless I ever felt in my entire life. And finally, one of the surgeons came down and pulled us into her room. And I was like, fuck, man, this could be like really bad. And basically, he just laid it out. He's like, it's bad, like really bad. And we kind of knew the severity of it because, yeah, it's my brother who told us by the elevators how bad it was, because his ex-wife is in the EMT or EMS or whatever. I always get that shit mixed up. Anyway, she does that shit. And she was calling around because she is, you know, when you're in that shit and you're trying to move up, you float around every fucking station everywhere, just trying to hope that somebody lets you get your foot in the door so that you can like have a full-time job. So she knows everybody. So she finally hit up somebody that knew and basically said the ambulance, the engine was transported in the ambulance, which the engine is the fire truck, like a fucking like the fire truck. And when an engine is taking an ambulance with it, that's like worst possible scenario, because the engine's basic, from my, I think my understanding is of, is the engine's there to get the fucking ambulance where it needs to go. Like, that thing's going to get the ambulance where it needs to go. So he, basically what happened to him was, is, and I'm going to try not to like go into too much detail, because it's just, I'm still all over the place about it. Like, at times I'm just like cool, and then other times I'm like, you know, this could have been prevented so easily. But he was working on a thing called a pressure pot. He worked at an engineering company, and when you design something, you create it and then you make a mold of it, and then when you go to make a mold of it, that's because you're ready to make multiple of that one thing you just made. Well, when they want to make the mold, they have to put it inside of a thing called a pressure pot, which is like a pressure cooker, except for like industrial use. Well, he was refurbishing the unit and he was pressure testing it, and he was using an impact gun, like a little, you know, gun they used to at the shops take off lug nuts when they do your tires. He was tightening down they're called pinch bolts, to pinch the lid down to the tank, and one of the brackets that held the pinch bolt in place snapped off, and it caused a chain reaction, and basically Imagine a soda can. You're looking at a soda can with the top towards you, and all around it, it's got pinch bolts that's holding the top of the soda can together. Well, one goes, the next one goes, the next one goes, and then all of a sudden, the lid just. I finally went over there and saw it like a couple weeks after him being in the hospital, and I just could see it in my. Like, you know, when you have a mechanical background, you understand things just by looking at them. And I looked at it and I was like, this is just fucked. Like, and I was looking at his coworkers because they brought me to it. And I was like, I'm like asking them questions about it. I'm like, why is this like this? Why are these welds like this? Why this weld didn't even penetrate into this metal? Like, this was going to happen at some point. And it just had to be my dad. So the lid came out, and basically he had the impact gun in his hand. They imagine you're tightening something in front of you at chest level. He's tightening it, breaks off, comes out and hits his arm, shatters his entire arm, and then hits him full blown and completely obliterates his liver. He went to the ICU for internal bleeding. Basically, they removed some of his liver. They were trying to pack him until they could get him to stop. You know, it was just, it was fucking wild. He died once. They brought him back that night. You know, he was just, you know, his blood was so thin, could not clot. So we surrounded him and basically in his room, and we're like, he's going to go. And it's like, oh, fuck, man. Like, what do? You know, you just reminisce. So we all sat around him and reminisce, and he didn't let go that night. He pushed through and he was alive. I slept right next to him and he was alive the next morning, and he was. And I hate to say I regret it, but it beats me up every day. He was alive and he could hear and he could move and he could acknowledge things, but he had a tube down his throat, so he couldn't really talk. And he was just uncomfortable and squirming. And they're like, what do we do? Like, you know, they're trying to figure out what to do with this man. And, you know, he's just, it's bad. So finally, they come up with a plan. He has so many fucking surgeries, man. Like, it's just a fucking nightmare. Well, after your liver goes, your kidneys start to go. And his kidneys started going to failure. So his creatinine, I believe, the numbers were going up. And he wasn't able to, you know, he started to basically look like a Johnson baby. His whole body turned yellow. And it was like, what the fuck, man? And then the doctor said, we don't have, his liver is affecting his kidney. He was on dialysis, all kinds of shit. And finally, like, the doctor called me. I went back to work and I was trying to push through, and I called my doctor and they're like, he's just not going to live. Like, it's either he dies here or we transport him to somewhere that's going to know what they're doing. And so he got transported to OSU. I got a call, basically said, yeah, just take him. It was like, fucking go from Mount Carmel East to OSU in an ambulance where it's like trying to keep him alive the whole way there. Fucking 30, 40 grand. Easy. Like nothing. Got him there. Of course, my mom couldn't fucking help herself. She shows up. I'm not there. My dad, you know, new hospital arrives. You know, they have to start from square one. They're not going to take over from the last hospital. They're going to want to figure out where to get him and stabilize him in their area. So he was in the surgical ICU in Doan Hall for a while. Crazy shit, though. He fucking worked on that floor, worked in that room, did the ceiling tiles and the flooring in the area that he, you know, was in. And it's fucking wild, but got transferred there, and it was crazy because he was like, you know, full blown, like coming back to life, and he's like fucking just squirming everywhere. Finally, they get him stabilized, and for a while there, he was just basically in a fucking coma. His body put him in a coma. But I called my work, and I was like, dude, I can't fucking do this. Like, I can't fucking do this. So I took like almost 3 months, like basically your max amount for like FMLA. Cause I'm like, I gotta be the one to be here for him. So we started GoFundMe and everything, and that helped me and my brother financially through all of it. And I'm so thankful for that. It was so beneficial. Just that I could be there for him. I wish I was there for him more, but you know, you can only be in a fucking hospital room for like so long before it just drives you fucking nuts with all the beeping going off every 2 seconds. So I was there, and I was like, you know, I need to take care of myself. So I would go there in the morning. I would wait for the fellows and the doctors to come around, do their rounds. They would always get new people every week, new faces, new minds, and ended up getting to know a lot of people there. Became friendly with a lot of people, unfortunately, but at the same time, it was just nice to have them there because it's like, you know, you're not alone. And then like, man, it was just left and right. Like, shit was relentless, man. And my brother just gave up. That was hard to just not focus on him. He just gave up. And his wife didn't really, like, deep down, I feel like his wife wasn't helping the situation. You know, I can't see it from their point of view. I can only see it from my point of view. And it's like, I hate to say it, but it was like a lot. Like, you know, I felt like everybody was just giving up. And I remember I had that mental fucking breakdown because, like, Luke pulled me aside one night and was like, you know, he wanted to talk to me about it. And man, like, that was a lot. It just basically asked me, like, because I told you, like, what I knew. Like, I was absorbing everything in those meetings in the morning. And carrying it every day with me and watching everything happening. And you know, when you said that to me, when you said, you know, about being prepared for him to be gone, that was like, that was a lot, man. It's a lot, because nobody really, like, nobody that I knew that I could trust to understand what I knew had actually had the time to, like, had some sort of a discussion about it with me. I'm sure other people did, but it's just like, it's just in that moment, it was just like, you know, it's wild. Like, it's a lot. But it got to the point where basically he just couldn't, you know, it was just medicine was keeping him alive. There's nothing more we could do. It's probably the worst thing that's ever happened. Like, in my life, is, you know, he's my best friend. He'll always be my best friend. And the hardest thing was I had to make the decision to end his life. And yeah. But it took a lot to get to that point for me, because I wanted to know that if I'm going to have this power to do this to the person that I love, like, I want to know that I'm 100% confident that this is what is the best thing. And there was one doctor there. She's like, she's a fucking asshole to everybody. Didn't believe in fucking carrying a laptop around or a phone. Man, I wish I remembered her name. Yeah, she would come around to everybody and would be like, oh, be careful. Like, she leads all the meetings. And when she gets into the rotation, like, you better have your shit together. Because if you were like one of the, so how does it work? It's like you're a fellow, you're a doctor, And then you have the younger people, the younger kids. The
residents?
So you have like the attendings and then the fellows and then the residents and then med students.
Yeah, the med students. Oh my God. Some of them would fucking be ruthless to them. And I'm just sitting over here. I'm just like laughing because like, because it's like, I'm just watching this shit go down. Because like they've got like those med students, some of them have a backbone. Most of them don't. Because they're just like, they're just, it's almost like they're thrown to the wolves, yeah, like just fire flight. 100%. And if you fucking show any sign of weakness, they will sniff it out and you're fucked.
Yep.
Like, so we'd have one med student. I remember her. She was like, talk really soft and it pissed that lady off so much. She's like, huh? What? Speak up. And like, it was so entertaining. It made the mornings good. But so I needed her for closure. Like, it got to the point where it was like she was the only person that was like I hate fucking beating around the bush. I hate that lovey-dovey bullshit. Like, I don't like, don't fucking sweeten it up with a strawberry on top. Just give me the shit. Right now, just tell me what is up. And she fucking just laid it out. She's the only person that I, and it got to the point where it's like, you know, like she imprinted on me while I was there to the point where it was like, I could trust anything that come out of her mouth because it was like my dad. Like, you know, it was like she had an effect on me like my dad did. So when it came down to it, where we're, you know, what's that thing where it's like, the fucking family can't figure shit out. So they bring these people in to help you figure out, make a decision on stuff. Like nobody,
palliative care,
palliative care. They came in and like, it was just like, it was good, but bad at the same time. Like it works, but it didn't. And you know, my brother, he was like, you know, at that point where he was like, yeah, I'm good. Like, you know, I'm at this point where like, you know, I think his wife had basically explained to him, like, he's not getting any better with his charts, and he's going to die. But I needed her. Like, I needed this lady to come here. And she had actually, I had to wait a full day because she was going to this thing where it was like a big meeting with all the doctors and they talk about stuff. And she had actually brought up my dad. So basically my dad had... there's this bloodborne disease that you can get in the ICU that is, there's no cure for it. I forget what the name of it is called, but it's a very common thing. And basically his liver was dying and it had thrived in his liver and there was no way he could survive through getting part of his liver taken away or anything. There's no way in hell they would give him a liver considering the injuries. It's like, we're not wasting a liver on your dad. And I completely got it. But basically, like, she came in and she was like, yeah, this is how it is. Like, and somebody must have told her, like, I needed her because, like, she... Like the next day, it was like a couple days later, like we had planned the day that he was going to basically die, like the day that we were going to let him die. I'm fucking laughing. I'm not laughing about that. The whole situation, like she came into that fucking room, man, like out of nowhere. Like we were all getting ready. You know, you all just sit around them. And basically how it is, like they make them comfortable and it's just, you just let them slowly pass away. And she came in out of nowhere behind me. And this is like a couple of days after we had this fucking meeting, like, yeah, he's just not going to make it. And she like came up to me and just pulled me in. She gave me a hug and she was crying. And she's like, I was like, what the fuck, man? Like this person, like, she just, I don't know. I can't really explain it, but it was like, wow, she cares, you know? She doesn't even know me. She just think she knows that I appreciate her for what she does, and it was just nice to have that. So it meant a lot to me. But yeah, so that's probably the worst thing. One of the worst things. Yeah, over the last couple of years, that's probably like the biggest one is that. And you know, it's changed a lot of things in my life, my dynamics, how I communicate with people, my relationship, and I'm just happy, you know, like I hate that it happened, but at the same time I'm also like thankful in a way that certain things did happen, because it kind of it opened up a lot of different things to help me focus on and better my relationship with not only my family, but as well as my fiance. Like, it through a lot of the struggles with it, it helped us grow closer, and I'm just very, like, you know, I'm just very happy that she's around. She's like the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I'm just happy that she's still here. Like, it takes a lot to go through that in a relationship, to be able to be there with somebody through that kind of shit, because it's like not easy at all. So much easier to just walk away, and she did. She stayed right by my side. You know, my mom, man, my mom and my dad, like, my mom would always talk shit about my dad, like, 24/7. It was getting to the point where it's like, sometimes at like, dinner, I'd have to tell my mom, like, Mom, man, you gotta chill out. Like, Dad's not like that anymore. Like, shit's changed. Like, he's moved on. You need to move on. And, like, when she started to see the things throughout the entire process of my dad being in the hospital, her perspective completely changed. She's, like, a whole different person now. And I'm honestly, like, glad that she could take that, take away from, like, all the bad. She could see that my dad, you know, throughout all the bullshit, like, it wasn't just because he was, like, you know, in her eyes, a piece of shit. It was more or less, like, he just was going through a lot of shit and just didn't know how to deal with it. It just caused a fracture between them, so... Yeah. And then I think probably the other thing that fucking worst thing that could possibly happen, man, like, my fucking aunt died not too long ago. And I hate that for it to sound like it's just rolling off. I never had a room. This is the one that was like drug addict and shit, you know. Fucking my grandma called me. It didn't call me. The EMS called me because she had numbers written down by her bedside. But apparently my aunt had OD'd in the other room, and I was on the list, and I was the only one that picked up. And I had to go over there, and I'm like, holy fuck. You want to talk about, you ever been in a schizophrenic's house? It's a nightmare. Like, they cover the windows, they cover the mirrors, they put holes in the walls because they think things in the walls. It's like a fucking nightmare. Walk into a nightmare. And my fiance was right by my side, and I was like, great. Fucking try to get over one thing, and then another thing hits the fan. And that was just a fucking nightmare, man. Like, thankfully that doesn't really, like, affect me too much, but it really affected, you know, my relationship, because it was like, how much more can we go through, like, in such a small period of fucking time, you know? Like, fuck, man. So I ended up that night, I was like, I scared the shit out of my grandma, basically saying, you're not fucking staying here. Like, you can't even live on your own. Like, I'm driving your ass to fucking Indianapolis, where your fucking brother's at, and you guys are just going to live together or something. So I was calling family out there. It's like, she's not fucking staying here. I'm calling the cops after I leave. Like, no way in hell. And I ended up, like, I had to lie to her, get her to fucking go. And luckily, you know, I got her in the car, drove, met halfway to halfway between Carmel, Indiana, and Columbus, and handed her off and drove my ass home. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning. I went to work the next day. Everybody's like, why the fuck are you at work? I'm like, eh. I mean, it's either I deal with this or I work and I just like hopefully let it go. Because I don't know. I never, there's a difference between having a relationship with somebody and not having a relationship. But just some wild shit, man, going on. Like, it's always something wild. It can't catch a fucking break, you know, sometimes. So, like I said, you know, just gotta fucking deal with this shit and move on. It sucks, you know. Everything takes shorter time or a longer time. But I feel like I don't talk about a lot of this stuff too much because, like, I've been through so much shit. And I've had to, like, be in such positions that nobody at my age should really be in. And it's kind of, like, just made me have a little bit thicker skin with a lot of stuff. I mean, I still get emotional about it, you know. I have my moments, but like, I've been through a lot of shit, and it's kind of like, I can, talking about it, it's like, oh fuck, oh yeah, whatever. Like, you know, for me, it's like, yeah, this fucking happened, dude. Like, you know, it's kind of like whatever. But like, some people here, they're just like, damn, dude, that's fucking terrible. I remember I was out to dinner with Nick and Gina, and like, went to some like taco place over there by IKEA, and they were like talking about going there, and I'm like, yeah, fuck it, let's go there. And I was helping them move this heavy ass fucking table into their house from a friend's. It was like obscenely heavy. And like, I love Nick and Gina. Like, they're so much fun. I wish I could spend more time with them, but like, we sat down and they were just like, yeah, fuck it, let's just bullshit. And they were just asking me about a lot of things. They were just kind of like, I'm just talking about it, and they're just like, oh, fucking wide eye, kind of like you. Yeah. you're like, fuck, man.
Just over here crying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't minimize it. You've been through a lot, yeah. Especially in the past couple of years. I remember when you first told me that, and I remember that conversation that we had, and I was really scared to have that conversation because yeah. I didn't want to.
Yeah.
But I, and this is not to make it about me at all, but I felt like if I was in your situation, I would need somebody to be like honest with me about
yeah.
what was going on.
I mean, dude, and like, I was poking like little things at you because you'd ask me questions and I'd tell you, and I'd see your face and you're just like thinking. And I'm just like, that's a lot of thinking right there. Like,
yeah.
I'm just going to keep focusing. And then I was expecting it at some point, but like, you know, you never really truly like go through it until it's like, you know, say it right then and there. And you're like, fuck, yeah. Man, I didn't think about this until next thing, you know, you said something. It's like, you need it. You need that shit. I mean, same way with that lady I told you about. Yeah. You need that shit. You can't paint things a certain way just to try and help you process it better. Like, a lot of things, it just has to be like, this is how it is, you know? What can we do to move forward? How can we try and help make this better? There's nothing you can make better about it, really. But
yeah. But no, I appreciate you being transparent with that, because it's a lot of heaviness to deal with in such a short amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
Not only that, but just how it all happened, and you know, but I really appreciate you being honest and open about it, because I think, you know, a lot of people go through really terrible. I just got a text today from somebody at the gym whose parent just found out they had terminal cancer.
Oh god.
And it's, you know, 36 months. And it's like, I mean, yes, I mean, if anything, I mean, hopefully as you continue to work through it, and I can tell that you have a lot more to work through, and which is totally great, totally fine. I would encourage you to continue working through that. But at the same time, you're going to have people
come up in your life who are going to have things where you can really empathize with them and you can really come alongside them.
I think there was somebody at the gym recently. I'm so bad with fucking names, man. I'm so sorry. I'm going to just apologize. But she's been losing a lot of weight, and her husband just showed up, and she had lost her mom recently, and she came to me, and I was like, oh fuck, man, like, I don't know what's going to happen to me right now. But she started talking to me about it, and I just felt like I just couldn't, like, say everything I wanted to say to her, because it's like, you know, it doesn't like you when you talk about those things, you know, it's kind of like there's a time and place. Like, we've gotten comfortable with each other and stuff to the point where it's like, you know, I'm a pretty open book, and she's a really open book as well. But it's like I'd love to talk to her more about it, just to be able to like not find answers, but just talk about, like, processing these things.
Yeah, walk through it together.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I think the hardest thing about losing a parent is you're still their kid, but like you lose that person that you get to go to now. Like, that's always going to be the hardest part, is losing that person you meet, you know. And having to just find a new way to get around that, I guess. Like, I'm not wording it right, but, like, you know, hopefully you know what I mean. Like, you just don't have that person anymore. You don't have your parent anymore, and you gotta grow up. And
grief isn't bad. Grief isn't bad.
Yeah,
it's a good thing for us.
So. Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that part of your story with us.
Do you guys have any other questions?
What's your fiance's name?
Adriana. Yep.
Okay.
Everybody calls her Adriana or Adrian, but she's like very particular about how her name is, so I just try to make sure everybody knows Adriana. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like Adrian at the gym.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Can remember that.
Adriana.
Yeah.
Is she gonna join the gym?
No. She likes Olympic lifting. I got her into it. She was actually working with who's that big dude that has like outrageously big ass arms, that's friends with
it's Dan Bailey's wife.
Dan Bailey's wife.
Yeah, you told me about Alex.
Yeah,
that's her name.
Yeah. I was talking to Christy, and Christy's like, hook her up with Alex. I'm like, oh fuck, hey, you know, because like she needs women's empowerment. Like, she needs like to have a woman with her to get her through this stuff. Like, I'm totally for it. Like, you need that. So I was like, hit up Alex, like, hit this girl up. And it was great. It was perfect. Like, got her into lifting and stuff. Olympic lifting. She was really enjoying it. And then, you know, when we moved, it kind of like went downhill. Cause it's like, you're trying to find a perfect environment for what you want to do. And CrossFit's great, but it's not the kind of thing that she wants. She wants something where she can just do what she wants in a way without the pressure of like CrossFit.
Sure.
So, yeah, Pat kind of settled her decision on that. Pat, you know, Pat and Barb, yeah. Pat Freya. Pat came up to her one day, and Pat, it's okay. If you listen to us, it's okay. Like, it's not your fault. Kind of is, but kind of isn't. But yeah, I think she's like, Pat came up to her and said, are you going to join the gym? And she's like, hell no. And then she's like, who's that one guy? And I'm like, oh, that's Pat. He's really nice. He likes to talk to everybody. He's a really good guy. She's like, yeah, he was really like trying to get me to join. And I was like, well, And in my head, I'm like, that's just not going
to
happen.
Pat's totally going to listen to this. And Pat, when you listen to this, I want you to know that I'm laughing at you right now.
But it's going to be okay, Pat.
It's okay.
I'm still here.
I think we should move on.
Yeah. Peeves.
Peeves.
Oh, here, take the mic.
My peeve this week is not, I'm not going to make a big build up because you laugh at me.
Whatever. I love the big build up. I'm all about that.
You're all about the big build up?
Yes. Because I laugh at you doesn't mean that I don't enjoy it.
Okay. Let me think about a big build up real quick.
Okay.
So, this has actually been a pet peeve of mine since I was little.
Oh, man.
I feel like most of your pet peeves start off that way.
No. No. A lot of them are relatively recent. This one has always bothered me, and then I've just attached anger to it. So,
damn.
Yeah.
Wow. This is always pet peeves.
So, when I was little, my grandma... I was, like, first fascinated, but then, like, immediately disgusted at her varicose veins that she had on the back of her legs.
Oh, those things.
You think varicose veins is a pet peeve?
Yes. And now every time I see varicose veins, I just want to...
Is it sort of like a gallbladder?
No.
Okay, so that's what I was asking about your legs earlier.
What are varicose veins?
I don't even know what that is.
It's the ones that...
is that the dangly thing on the chicken's neck?
No, where they all rock?
It's the infomercial. It's the infomercial where they talk about making them disappear with, like, a needle.
They're really superficial veins that, like, just dilate to the extent where you can see them. I apologize, Ben Mason. I know you have varicose veins on your legs.
Oh, man.
And so I know,
David. Can you pull up a picture for the audience?
I want you to know that they are a pet peeve of mine. I'm sorry you have to find out.
I don't even know what I'm looking at.
I mean,
someone just veiny legs.
No, like, but it's varicosity. It's not just a vein. It's not like this. It's like it looks like a worm.
Oh, that's interesting. And that's a pet peeve?
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's a pet peeve.
Oh, I do not like that.
You're just grossed out.
No, no, I'm not grossed out. It's like, I want to cut off that person's leg after seeing that picture.
So he's grossed out.
It just makes me so mad.
It's going to be okay, Beth. It's going to be okay.
Wow. Wow. I feel like... It's like...
You know,
with vitiligo?
No, not vitiligo.
Like you're just naming like conditions that people have and talking about.
You can get them stripped. You can get them stripped. Just take them out. They'll grow back, but just take them out.
What?
What?
So
just get rid of them.
Lucas, what's pet pushing your peeve?
Oh man, like I'm sure I got all the normal shit. My biggest pet peeve, man, honestly, smell. Like
the ability to smell?
Like no, just smell. Like
bad scents?
Bad smells. Like yeah. If somebody smells or something smells bad or like dog shit, like I can't do it. Like, and then
just any bad smell.
Yeah, like BO. BOs, and of course, like go to a CrossFit gym, you know, like shit's everywhere. But like, I just, if somebody walks by and I catch a whiff of BO, I'm out. Like I gotta go. No, I don't vomit. I'm just like, just disgusted.
Oh,
and I gotta walk away.
Wow,
like, you're covering. Like, your feet. I can hold it.
Yeah,
in.
I was gonna say, good thing I'm covering my feet.
Like I can't do it.
My feet are a little ripe.
You want to talk about, but not just BO, like Long John Silver's, like that's probably the worst. Like if you want
to, that is the pinnacle of worst scents to you.
That is probably the absolute worst smell on the face of the earth.
Do you think it's the malt vinegar or the fried fish?
It's the fried.
What if it's masked by the malt vinegar?
I've never been to Long John Silver's.
Don't go.
Oh, you know the Long John Silver in Pickerington? That's combined with the KFC.
Don't know anything about it. It's over here.
You repressed it.
Well, I repressed long dead silvers. They don't exist. There's only one that I know of that I can remember, and I just don't.
Wow, the pinnacle of bad sense.
It's almost like in my head they're as rare as people seeing like an A&W root beer. Like,
oh yeah, place. Remember those?
Like to be fair, there's a few, and this is actually a conversation I had with Grace, literally maybe last week. There's a few places in my mind that I'm like, how in the world is this possibly still around?
Arby's.
Well, Arby's, yeah. Arby's. There's actually a demographic, and it's really like
money
anywhere between 40 to 60 captures the Arby's generation of people.
Really?
40s and 60s fuel that Arby's economy.
Oh, dude.
And Arby's I think
all day.
But for example, Long John Silver's is one of those places I'm like, how is this place around?
Yeah.
That Mattress Firm is also up there. Like, how often you buy a mattress?
I don't know how they do it, man.
Like, you can just go to most, like, you can go to, like, the mall and go to the, like, I'm talking about the standalone Mattress Firm across from Players.
It's kind of like,
you know, right by that Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. How's I feel it like there? It's kind of like a Red Wing shoe store. Like, you see a Red Wing shoe store. Yeah. You're like, they're, like, you walk in there. You buy one
boot and it's good for your life.
Well, you walk in there and you're like, man, there's not a lot of shoes in here. And like most of it, like you said, is just like these old burly guys that look like they've got some shoes that have been through some shit, like a war. And they'll come in, they'll drop them like, yeah, I just need these redone. Like, I don't know how those places stand. There's a Red Wing Shoes, I think, over there by Kroger. I know. South of Uptown.
I know exactly what you're talking about. How's that place still
there? I don't know how that's there.
How's that still there?
Don't know. It's got to be, they got to be like, here, we'll keep you alive. We'll throw you like kibbles. Here, pay your rent.
That's so fascinating.
So it smells.
Yeah.
Long John Silver's.
It stems from my childhood.
See? Childhood pet peeves.
Yeah. My brother loved Long John Silver's, and he would hide that shit. Like, he'd get like a fucking fish basket or hush puppies.
Oh, the hush puppies. I'm not gonna lie. I used to partake in the Long John Silver's as a kid.
Hide that shit under his fucking bed.
Oh, with the Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
You walk in his room, yeah, right next to it. Right next
to
it.
The gold
one. So he knew I'd stay away. And I'd walk in that room and I'm like, I'm fucking out. Like, there's literally a Long John Silver's container right there.
Fish sticking out from under the bed.
Yeah, my brother left shit in his room all the time. That place smelled so bad.
Oh my goodness. That's a really good pet peeve.
That is one good one.
All right, 2 minute drill?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Do you know what the 2 minute drill is?
Yeah, I think it's where you say something and I have to say something.
Yeah.
Potato, potato.
Yeah, like right off the cuff. Like,
yeah. Don't even think about it. Just okay. First response.
All right. You know who's going first?
Yeah.
Who's going first?
Me.
Okay.
I thought that was understood.
He said, yeah.
Oh, hold on a second. Ready? Go.
What is your favorite thing Adriana?
Adriana
cooks.
Yeah. Oh, shit, man.
Pick one. Doesn't have to be gluten free either.
Is it 2 minute drill? I'm so bad at this.
TikTok.
Gotta keep going.
Rolls.
Ooh, okay.
What's your least favorite color?
Oh. This way, clockwise, bro.
Dude. Red. I hate red.
Yeah.
Red is just not good.
Okay.
You had mentioned during your lunch break you would go to Target and pick up a snack. What was that snack?
Oh, dude. You know those pickle bites in the bag? The hot pickle bites.
Oh.
They fucking die after like 10 of them. That's so good.
Nicki Minaj or Cardi B?
Cardi B, I hate Nicki Minaj.
Oh, man. What is your favorite restaurant on Bethel Road?
Bethel Road?
Oh, fuck, dude.
There's so many good ones.
I know. That's why I said Bethel Road.
I'm gonna say it, Minga.
Would you rather have a penny that doubles every day for 30 days or a $1.7 million?
A penny that doubles every day for 30 days or... That's too much math. I'd take the $1 million.
Okay.
Would you rather have an octopus stuck to your face for the rest of your life or be stuck in the desert naked?
Stuck in the desert naked.
All right. Yeah. What is your Freeman CrossFit workout? If you had to, build it, like, what are the rough movements?
You know,
what
time I literally zone out everything until I show up. I really enjoy that overhead squat and run one.
Nancy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Billboard for the entire world to see. What would you put on it?
Oh, fuck.
You could do that. That's true.
I want to answer that one.
But no,
I
That's
man.
Good. That's good.
Well,
Lucas, thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing your life.
Yeah.
If I had to describe you, I would describe you as a Red Wing goat. Because you've gone through some shit, dude.
Oh, yeah.
You have. And hearing you talk about it, I don't get an ounce of, like, resentment. I don't get an ounce of, I'm owed this, or woe is me. Like, and that's the thing that I'm kind of blown away by. It's just the fact that you are... that you were resilient, that your main focus is, okay, I know I'm going through some hard seasons. How can I learn? How can I grow? I can't just sit in this for the rest of my life. But this is a part of me as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are moments where you're like, hey, I want to keep this over here. But I think there's a part of you that knows this is true. Like, this is who you are. Parts of this doesn't define you. But it makes up who you are, and I think the way you're kind of processing some of this stuff, inviting people into it, and I've spent some time talking to you about it as well, and like, you're growing, you are, and I'm excited to see how that not only impacts your next 3 years, but your relationship with your soon-to-be spouse, your family.
Yeah.
What that's going to look like for you, but
thank you.
It is encouraging. And I don't know how many people can relate, but you are a true example of someone that pushes through and has a desire to learn and grow. And you deeply care. Like, you deeply care about people. Like, the one thing that funny enough stood out, it's like, I don't know why people had such bad luck getting a hold of people, but they could always find you. Like, you're dependable. Like, you're loyal. You deeply care. So just thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So
thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Audience, thanks for listening to the episode. Sorry for our long hiatus. We've been partying. We're making
hiatus.
Yeah. But we'll be back. Hopefully catch us in next 2 weeks. Maybe a month. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.